This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo.
Charles Barber was educated at Harvard and Columbia Universities and worked for 10 years in New York City shelters for the homeless, mentally ill. His recent book, Comfortably Numb, How Psychiatry is Medicating a Nation, was released in 2008 to national U.S. media attention. Charles has also written frankly about his own childhood experiences with obsessive-compulsive disorder in his book Songs from the Black Chair. He's currently a senior executive at The Connection, an innovative social service agency, and a lecturer in psychiatry at the Yale University School of Medicine.
Charles Barber joins us on the phone from Connecticut. Welcome to People First Radio, Charles.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Tell us about Mad Pride as a movement. What have you observed over the years?
It's gone from nothing to quite a big deal. Essentially, I've been working in the mental health field going back to the 80s, really full time, starting in the early 90s. And to generalize, when I began, people weren't really interested in hearing from patients about, you know, what they'd experienced and what they thought about their treatment. It was what they call a medical model, very hierarchical, with the doctors in charge. And at the time, I was a case manager, and I was very much at the bottom of the pole. But the patients were at the bottom, and you basically kind of, you know, did what you were told to do. I'm generalizing, but that's kind of the way it was. And then I would say every year since then, but really taking force in the mid to late 90s, and then just increasingly gaining strength, the consumer movement, also known as the Mad Pride movement, has revolutionized psychiatry, where patients are speaking up about what was good for them, what was not good for them, what they think about it. And I think even in the last 2 years, it's gained even further strength on the heels of the internet, where, you know, people have created very elaborate and powerful websites and communicated and networked with each other. And so I think it's a real phenomenon. And you saw it, you know, articles in the New York Times and Newsweek, and, you know, it's kind of coming to the fore right now.
Yeah, we've been speaking with various people across the country today about it, and I know locally, too, we see a lot of, just an increased awareness and sharing going on between people, less isolation, I think. You've written about your own experiences with mental illness, and how has this changed your life?
Well, hugely. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now had I not experienced obsessive compulsive disorder pretty intensely as a going back, you know, to being as a child, but really kind of hitting me hard, late teens, early 20s, as do many mental illnesses affect people at that age most acutely. So that kind of set me off on an entirely different path. I was kind of the all-American boy. I was a student at Harvard and probably would have been a professor or a writer. I'm a writer now, but writing about other stuff. I ended up dropping out of a couple colleges and working at a group home for people with developmental disabilities, and eventually went back to school and all that, but totally changed my course. And then my own personal experience has very much affected my more academic writing, and very much informed by those lessons that I'm sure your other guests have talked about today of the recovery movement, which is what recovery from severe mental illness is really like, as opposed to, you know, what the drug company ads or what, you know, other images are.
Mm-hmm. Your book, Comfortably Numb, How Psychiatry is Medicating a Nation, can you talk just a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. It came out, you know, as you said, about a year and a half ago, and the paperback came out a few months ago, and tons of interest and national media attention, probably, you know, 150 interviews since it came out. And I do write in the book about the recovery movement. In the book, I'm very, you know, proud to say has been embraced by some of the people involved in that. And I talk in the book about drugs being you know, an important component of care, but we've, in America anyway, the United States, we've totally sort of thrown in our lot with just drugs as the way of dealing with mental health issues. And there's a whole other social aspect to it that we've kind of ignored. And so my book is basically divided into two parts. The first part is about the kind of creation of the drug empire. And the second is, it's called A Series of Alternative Approaches. And it's looking at other ways of looking at mental illness and other ways of dealing with mental illness, of which social supports of the kind that I'm sure you've talked about on the show today are an essential part.
Charles, I'm sure that the Mad Pride movement as such embraces or is involved in a continuum of responses to medication and decisions that individuals may or may not make around either taking medications or not taking medications. What would you have to say to that?
Well, first of all, it's an individual choice, and I think that's largely what the Mad Pride movement is saying, is it's about choice and what, you know, freedom of expression and freedom of care and being in charge, even when you're afflicted by an illness that at times takes away that capacity. You know, one of the things that people are doing are what's called advanced directives, where when they're stable, they're filling out legal forms to tell doctors or treaters, you know, what they would like in the case if they're of psychosis or anything like that. So individual choice is number one. Number two, I make it very clear in Comfortably Numb that the drugs can be really, really effective, usually with a lot of side effects, but can be really effective with for people with severe mental illness. My critique of the drugs in the book is primarily about their overuse for people that have no mental illness whatsoever, and their kind of the way that they've been generalized, particularly antidepressants, to no longer treat depression, but sort of life, normal life problems. And so I actually feel that they can be very helpful, you know, with severe conditions, but there's a whole continuum within that. There, you know, I've seen people that it's been quite remarkable, the effect of the drugs. I'd say that's definitely, you know, a minority. It's sort of the rule of thirds that's very common in medicine. A third get better, a third stay the same, a third get worse. That's kind of my impression of the drugs. Within the Mad Pride movement, there are people that are militantly against any use of drugs, and you know, maybe you talk to some of those folks today. A lot of times, people are very angry about their treatment, and specifically about their treatment with drugs. And I think what, you know, I wouldn't share all of that anger, but. I think what is very important and is very healthy is the ability to express that anger. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, with the new media and the internet, people have sort of a bigger voice to do that. And I think that that expression and being heard and that dialogue is part of the healing process itself.
Mm-hmm. How has your work in the shelters for the mentally ill people who are homeless, how's that affected your take on what you're doing and your current directions?
Yeah, you know, again, one of those sort of formative experiences. I worked in New York City shelters for 10 years with, you know, with people with severe psychiatric illness. And my work is very much informed from that perspective in that, one, I saw, you know, the drugs being taken by people with really severe conditions, and I saw a whole range of responses to people even with severe conditions. And so, and then in the sort of the 10 years I did that, I in American society, it kind of went from nobody knowing about these drugs, taking these drugs in the late 80s, early 90s, to sort of 10% of people, you know, taking these drugs. And, you know, all of a sudden they became very mainstream very, very quickly by the end of the 1990s. And my perspective is very much, if you have a severe mental illness, you know, you should at least be exploring these drugs. But why are you exactly are you doing it if you don't have any, if your diagnoses are extremely dubious or you don't have any diagnosis at all? And there's been a kind of a watering down in psychiatry, a huge expansion in the number and types of diagnoses to things that I consider sort of life issues, you know, life problems, everyday problems. And so, you know, have my own personal experiences with mental illness and then having worked with people with far more serious disorders than I had, the meds have a utility, but a limited utility at times. But why generalize that out to people that have, you know, what we used to call the worried well or the neurotic? And then the other thing that's happened in the kind of grand sweep of people getting involved in psychiatric medication is that services for people with severe mental illness and the homeless mentally ill have not gone up concomitantly during that time. In fact, the number of people with appropriate services with, you know, really severe diagnoses and homelessness has not gone up at all as American society has become increasingly medicated. So we're kind of missing the most important people that we should be serving.
Charles, we just have a moment left. I'm wondering if I can ask you quickly a couple of questions. One is, do you have anything you'd like to close on in terms of Mad Pride, perhaps what it means to you or anything you may have liked to have mentioned that we haven't talked about yet? And also, how can people find out more about you and your work and your books?
Sure. My website is charlesbarberwriting.com, and Barber is B-A-R-B-E-R. So that's charlesbarberwriting.com. I've spoken a lot nationally and, you know, happy to talk to people. I think the Mad Pride movement is a wonderful, you know, wonderful movement. It's really a civil rights movement when you think about it. You know, in North America, we've gone through the civil rights proper around race, around women's issues, around gay issues, and now we're one of these last taboos, you know, psychiatric issues. To some, you know, there has been a reduction in stigma, but it's kind of limited, as I mentioned in that article in the New York Times, to depression. And what the Mad Pride movement is taking it to psychotic illnesses, severe mood disorders, and saying, you know, we're people too. There's a diversity of human experience. You need to hear it. You need to understand it. You need to live with it. And we embrace a lot of that experience, and we don't see it as things to be excised and removed and dismissed. So I think it's a wonderful sort of fourth iteration of the civil rights movement. And I think there's, whether I don't personally agree with everything that everybody's saying, but I think it's a wonderfully healthy statement of autonomy and expression and, you know, people forging mm-hmm. their own path, which is kind of, you know, what I did with respect to my own illness.
Thanks very much, Charles, for joining us today.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks very much for the good, excellent questions.
Thanks for taking the time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Charles Barber is an author and lecturer in psychiatry at the Yale University School of Medicine, and he joined us from Connecticut.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society, broadcast on Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of these organizations.